Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Poddleters. This week, I speak to investigative journalist and broadcaster Ellie Flynn. At 27, Ellie decided to go to the doctor and get her fertility checked due to a familial history of early onset menopause. And the results she received means that she decided to get pregnant and have a baby earlier than a lot of her peers. So we discuss motherhood, the pressure surrounding the decision of when and if to have a baby, as well as her work going undercover, especially in her documentary for Channel 4 last year about sexual harassment, which if you haven't seen it, you absolutely should, and you can catch up on all four. It's called Undercover Sexual Harassment, The Truth. I really hope you enjoy the episode, and as always, please do rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others to find the podcast. Happy listening. Bye.
So I always knew there was a risk that I might go through early menopause because my mum did, my nan did, one of my aunts did as well. And everyone in my family had kids really young, so my mum was 22 when she had me. So there was sort of no way of finding out whether anyone in my family could have a child past about 25. So I was like, right, I'm just going to go and get a fertility test done just because it was weighing on my mind. I was in a long-term relationship. You know, I thought we'd probably want to have kids one day. And so I just thought we'd go get this test done. And the results came back and I was told that I had a low egg count and a low AMH, which is a hormone, which is an indicator of fertility. Mine was a lot lower than it should have been at, I think I was 27 or 28 when I had the time when I had the test, probably 28. So mine was a lot lower than it should have been. And so what the doctor said was, this means that you probably don't have as long as other women do to have children. And if you want to, especially if you want to have more than one, he was like, I think you need to start thinking about it within the next year.
So what was your reaction in that moment? Was it, were you anticipating that answer at all? Or were you kind of thinking, I'm just going to get this done, but it's going to be fine?
No, it was pure shock. So I think part of me had, I'd definitely been worried beforehand that that was what I was going to get back. And my boyfriend kept being like, don't worry, like, I'm sure it's going to be fine. Like, it's, you know, it's not going to be that. And I think part of me knew that it probably was the result I was going to get. But the doctor just, I just remember like listening. So like, one, you know, when you hear that, when people say about when you get bad news from a doctor and it's just like, it washes over you and you're not really paying any attention to what they're saying. And my boyfriend was asking all of the questions and it was during COVID. So we were at my mum's house and we had a pair of headphones and we had one ear in each. And we were both like listening to this diagnosis on my phone in my childhood bedroom. And it was just like the most surreal situation. And yeah, my boyfriend was asking all these questions and I just like couldn't even think straight. I couldn't even think about anything that I needed to ask. And all I could think about was just like, oh my God, what does this mean? He was talking about freezing my eggs or freezing embryos and IVF and all of these sort of huge words that I couldn't wrap my head around.
I think it's so confusing because we're growing up on a time, especially where everyone's like, put your career first, like you don't need to have kids straight away. And then sometimes, and I think like a lot of the conversations that I have with my friends is like, that's all great, but then what if that isn't the case? And like in your case, sometimes you don't have as much time as we're told we're going to have. Initially, before this had happened, were you imagining that you'd have kids much later down the line? Or
yeah, I'd be like mid-30s, I think, before I'd even start thinking about it if this hadn't happened. I was like, you know, I love my job. I felt like my career was going really well. It was not the time that I would have chosen without this happening for me to have had kids. I probably would have waited for a few of my friends to have done it first. I followed them, did it when they did it. Yeah, it was definitely not anything that I was planning on happening anytime soon. And then I got, yeah, they told me this news and it just completely changed. It just completely changed everything, really.
How long did it take you from that moment of having that conversation before you were like, actually, now it's now or never?
Yeah, so I did have options. You know, one option was to freeze my eggs. And it took us like a little, you know, we had a conversation about it for a while and I sort of ummed and ahed with the egg freezing idea. But I know I'm quite squeamish and like I sort of just like didn't want to go through with it. I was like, oh, I don't know, needles and like that sounds long.
I'll just be pregnant for 9 months. Yeah.
I'm just like, have a get pregnant, have a baby. That's not long at all. That's super chill. So I just, yeah, I didn't really love the idea of egg freezing. And then what mostly put me off was the fact that that was all well and good, but then what if I struggled? And I knew I wanted kids. I knew it's something that's important to me, and I knew I wanted to do it with my partner. And so I was like, is it mad to sort of kick it down the line, freeze my eggs, and just spend the next sort of 8 years worrying about whether it's going to work, potentially struggle and it might not work. And then, you know, do I have the regret forever of not just doing it when I was younger? And it's hard. And it's like, you know, like you said, I think for our generation particularly, people are, I mean, there's loads of reasons why people aren't having kids, like careers coming first, they're expensive, people are doing it later. So I think you have the kind of peer element of it. But, and it's like, it's such a polarizing subject where I feel really conscious of what I say about it, because I don't want to like scaremonger everyone into having kids when they're 25, because what happened to me is super rare. And I know that like, it's not the right decision for everyone, and it's not helpful sort of pressuring women into feeling like they've got this ticking time bomb that means they have to do it quickly. But also I think we need to be a bit more frank about the fact that for some women there is a ticking time bomb, and for me that was the case. And you know, I just think it comes down to better education, and like I'd love to see more sort of options for, I had to go private to get this fertility test, and you know, I'd love to see more options like that on the NHS, or for people to be able to kind of get as much information as possible in a way that's like affordable and also not scary.
I think what you said about it being so polarizing is so true. And I think another interesting aspect is you're saying, like, oh, I don't want to scare anyone. But I remember a friend said to me once, I was like, oh, I don't think I want to have kids now. I think I want to get my career down. And like, I'd love to have kids when I'm like 36. And she was like, and only you can say that. Whereas what she wanted to do was get married, have a baby. And I think we were like 27, we had this conversation. She's like, I would never say that, because in like probably more so in London, like maybe in our circles, there is almost this like shame element to wanting to be a mum younger. And 28 isn't even really that young in the history of mothers, do you know what I mean? And so I think we've gone too far the other way, where people are thinking like, God, I shouldn't have a baby yet because I've got to wait, not even because of like any of the career or other reasons, but because it feels like that's the done thing now. Do you
yeah,
know what I mean?
No, definitely. Yeah, I think that definitely people are doing it later. And I think that as with anything, it's a decision that you want to make with your friends. You want to do it with your friends, and you don't want to feel like you're the only person doing it. But that is difficult for someone that knows from a young age that that is what they want. And if they feel like they're ready to, I think you're right. There can be a sense that, you know, people are going to judge you, or people are going to sort of think you're weird for like wanting to be a mum before 30, which really isn't that weird in the grand scheme of things.
No, I think it's only in the last like maybe 5 to 10, even less than 10 years that it has been like really normalized that people would be like, in your 30s is when you have a baby. But like, if I speak to most of my friends, my mum had me quite late because I was the third, but most of my friends' mums were having them in their early 20s. That was like the complete norm. And I think sometimes like feminist conversations around motherhood have almost gone too far, like you said, like trying to encourage women that they don't need to feel rushed. But then I do get worried sometimes. I'm like, what if I'm going, okay, great, well, I'll just have a baby at 40, which women do more and more. But what if that isn't available to me? It's just, I think it's such a minefield, and it's really tricky because we're not necessarily making decisions just based on when we want to be a mother. There's like so many other it's sometimes like not necessarily factors coming into play, like peer pressure or societal ideas.
And it's really hard. And I think it's important that I think that's why more people need to speak about it on both ends of the spectrum. Like, I think it's important that people who want to have kids younger feel like they can, and that there is maybe more awareness of some of the fertility issues that women might face, especially as they get older, but also not doing that in a massive scaremongering way, which is like, well, if you don't have kids by 30, then you're going to be infertile. Because that's also not true.
Yeah.
And I think it's like normalizing people who don't want to have kids, who maybe aren't that fussed by kids and are happy to leave it until they're in their late 30s. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. While also supporting women who think, actually, I know I really, really do want this, and so I want as much information as I can get in my 20s or in my early 30s, so that I then maybe don't have the panic when I get older if it doesn't happen.
What did you, because your career, from watching from the outside, let's say you're going from strength to strength, you've got like a really exciting documentary coming out, which we can talk about later, but your baby is 7 months old and you've still been working. So how is that? Because I can imagine that would have been such a big thing, like you're front facing, you're on camera, you're doing quite dangerous work sometimes. having a baby in that environment or being pregnant in that field of work is probably quite scary. And especially people in the media do tend to have children later because you've got to get those, you know, big bits of work out the way so that you're established. How has that impacted your career?
So in a way, it's been way better than I thought it was going to be. So I made the decision to have a baby and I was fine with that decision, but I was like, okay, this is it. My career's over. I'm going to have to be a stay-at-home mum now and that's the only option. And I was just convinced that I would never get any more work. And I really, really felt so anxious about it and I worried about it so much throughout particularly the early part of my pregnancy. And I didn't tell anyone work-wise that I was pregnant until I was like 8 months pregnant. And I was meant to be doing all these documentaries and I was like, oh, by the way, I can't start yet because I'm having a baby next week.
And then they seen you, like, did you not show for ages?
No, there's one guy that I just, because it was all on Zoom because it was like just after COVID. And there was one guy, the exec for the documentary that I'm making, who I've been chatting to him for ages about this. And I was like, I might not get commissioned for ages anyways. So there's no point just like putting a hold on anything. So I was like, just like have the conversations, see what happens. And then it was sort of in the final stages as it was like about to get commissioned. I went for this meeting at Channel 4 and I turned up like 8 months pregnant. And he was like, oh. I was like, oh yeah, I don't know if anyone told you, but I'm pregnant by the way. and everyone was just so nice and like really fine about it. And actually it hasn't been an issue at all. Like I'm working on a podcast investigation, which I had to stop halfway through, which they were all totally fine with. And Channel 4 and this production company have been so accommodating and like just so accommodating throughout the production process as well. I went back to work quite early and, you know, they were like offering to let me bring my baby to shoots if I needed to, you know, I was breastfeeding. So they were giving me time to pump in the middle of the day. And it was everything was really, really centered around me and the fact that I had this young baby and how I felt about it. And I just did not expect that at all. I thought, you know, even if they are fine about it and even if I can continue my line of work, I'm just gonna have to pretend that I don't have a 3-month-old baby at home. And it just like wasn't the case. So I think that's been really reassuring that you can still, I suppose with like the right kind of work environment or the right team around you, you can still have your normal life or your normal work life and also have a baby. So that's been quite reassuring.
That's incredible because I feel like that's such a positive story to hear because that is just not what you hear at all. Like women get pregnant and they're suddenly like, oh, like, or they get like maternity cover to come in and then they never rehire them after the maternity cover. And maybe like the industry you're in, it's quite lucky because they're probably slightly more advanced in those kind of things. But I think that is one of the biggest fears. Like so many of my friends I know maybe would have a baby sooner, but it's like, we can't risk that, like the risk with our careers, which men just don't have. They're like, yeah, my wife's pregnant and then they get a promotion.
Yeah.
But how's it impacted? Like you said, you did feel a bit like you're going to be missing out with your friends. How has it impacted like your social life and things? Like I think at the minute, and I'm quite guilty, people say this to me, because I've had a year of like going out a lot because I had a big breakup last year. And so I just suddenly was like with my friends the whole time and like doing all these really fun, like late 20s partying. And I think when you're watching that from the other side, like some people are like, oh my God, you're making me feel like I'm doing nothing. But I think whichever side you look at it always feels like it's better on the other side. But I didn't, that's sorry, so ineloquently put.
No, I know exactly what you mean. It's like, I think the grass, well, not even the grass is always greener, but it's like, you're always going to feel like you're missing out on something and you're always going to put pressure on yourself and feel like you're not doing it right or you're not doing what this other person's doing. And, you know, Instagram is the worst for that because you're constantly comparing yourself in some way to someone else. Like now I have that as a mum, but I also have that as someone in my late 20s. Well, I'm 30 now. I'm very officially an adult. I'm sort of like eternally optimistic in everything I do. And I was definitely naive when I thought about how little it was going to change my life. I was right. Like, I think they're just going to sort of like maybe slot in and like, you know, I'll just be like out and the baby will be there and I'll be at work and the baby will be there. And like, I was torn between those two things of kind of like, well, I'm obviously never going to work again. And then also being like, it'll be fine. I'll just bring the baby to work with me. And it, of course, it's changed my life. It's completely different to how it was before, but not in the ways that I thought it was going to be. So it's really hard to articulate. It's like, you know, there's all the cliches of like, I don't want to go out as much because like I'm happy to go home and like hang out with my baby and he's like really jokes and like we have a good time and I'm tired and I don't want to like go out until 4 a.m. anymore. But I also, you know, I and again, it's like I think I'm lucky that I work in an industry where I'm freelance, I can go back and do sort of a few days here and there. And so I've been able to slot back into my old life quite quickly and quite easily. And I know, I appreciate that that's not the case for everyone. Yeah. Like, you know, if you work really long hours for the NHS, you can't just kind of like slot in and do a couple of days here and there. So I feel really fortunate in that sense. But I think being able to get back to work has enabled me to like feel like myself. And so then it's made me more comfortable sometimes leaving him overnight. And if I want to go out with my friends, I can go out
someone,
with my
obviously.
Friends.
Yeah,
he's really, really self-sufficient.
He's really independent, yeah.
He's great. He just puts himself to sleep, makes himself an omelette, and he's fine.
But I remember thinking that once. I was like, I remember saying it to my mum, I think it's one of my elder sisters. I have three nieces and my eldest niece is nine. And I remember being like, oh my God, you can't just leave them if you go to the shop. My mum was like, no. I was like, can't you just put them in a cot? I thought you could just go. I think I must have been like 19 at the time, but it blew my mind. I was like, oh no, that is a lot to deal
oh, wow.
with. It's like you literally can never, it's not like a dog that you can just like be like, I'll be back in a minute. I was like, you have to watch them all the time. My mum was like, all the time.
Yeah.
I was like, God, that
you do.
Is quite
it's a
stressful.
Lot. It's a lot. But yeah, I think, you know, I think I definitely have still had, I mean, I don't go out obviously every weekend, but I have been out since I've had the baby and it's been really fun and I still see my friends. And I think that, yeah, I feel like I've been able to maintain that balance of being a mum and really enjoying that while also still trying to keep some parts of myself before I was a mum.
I think as well, there's something about like, because I do think this is about having a kid. I have a few friends that had children when we were like in our early 20s. And I get a bit jealous sometimes because I'm like, God, their mums are so young. So they've got like amazing grandparent support because their parents are still really young. And then they're going to be able to, like when they're in their 40s, their kid's going to be like so grown up. They can just swan off and do anything. And I think we forget that whichever period you have your kids, you're going to get freedom. It's just on the other side of the channel.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes everyone thinks, oh my God, if you have kids in your 20s, you're going to miss out in your 20s. But if we're having kids like in our late 30s and 40s, like your retirement's screwed. Like, do you know what I mean? When you're like having your lunchtime rosé, whatever you're doing,
yeah.
Like someone might have a four-year-old. So I think that like children are always going to mean that you're going to have to sacrifice like portions of your life. And sometimes I think we get too hepped up on, you know, like the 20s being this time. And actually, whenever I speak to anyone, they're always like, your 20s are the worst years of your life.
It just gets better.
It just gets better and better.
Everyone says. Yeah, and I think that's true. And, you know, that comes back to like, and again, this is such a cliche, but everyone says there's no right time to have a kid. And I don't think I'd have ever been able to find the right time. I'd have been like, oh, well, this is happening at work, or, you know, I've got tickets to Glastonbury next year, or like, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. And there'd have been 1,000 different reasons that I'd have put it off and put it off. And so for me, it's almost a relief that I had this decision that was kind of taken out of my hands, because I think I'd have found it really difficult to commit to it at any point. And I'd have always felt like it wasn't the right time. And I think what I've learned is that, like, you know, there isn't really a right time. It's like hard work and it does change your life massively, but it's great as well. And you can still do everything. You can kind of still make it work.
There's a really, I haven't read it, but he shared a quote, Rob Delaney, from his new book. He posted, whenever someone tells me they're expecting their first baby and they're nervous, I tell them the following. Oh my goodness, that's wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Listen, of course you're nervous, but here's the deal. You're ready for all the bad stuff. You've been tired before. You've been in pain before. You've been worried about money before. You felt like an incapable moron before. So you'll be fine with all the difficult parts. You're already a pro. What you're not ready for is the wonderful parts. Nothing can prepare you for how amazing this will be. There's no practice for that. And I remember I had, isn't that like,
that's so nice?
It's so nice.
It's so true.
Because I think there is this other aspect where people also really want to be like, Em Clarkson posted this, actually, I don't know if you follow her, but she's pregnant at the minute. And she was like, please can everyone stop DMing me going like, well, enjoy this now because once the baby's here, and she's like, I am trying to enjoy it, but you keep making me really stressed.
I saw that. I think I messaged her after that, actually, because I was like, it's really great, don't worry.
I think there's so much shame, and also it then can make you almost preemptively make things worse because you're so terrified. And like, I think on the one hand, it's good. I feel like we've been so enlightened as a generation to learn about motherhood. I listen to so many parenting podcasts, God knows why. I'm like, I feel very clued up and like, I'm always trying to read up on like how, and so I think our generation are really aware. I think it almost could have gone too far the other way, where I think people are terrified now of parenting because it feels like, oh my God, my life's going to be hell. But like that quote says, you're exhausted and you might feel awful, but like the payoffs are huge.
And it's so hard because I think this is true of so many different topics, but it's like in this bid to be sort of real or relatable, people, you know, share all of the difficulties of motherhood, which like, of course there are some, and like, it's important that that content is there. But then sometimes it's like you don't want to appear like someone who's enjoying it too much or who's like bragging about your baby. And so, you know, you find yourself being like, oh God, yeah, so he's a nightmare, honestly. I'm like making up things that like my baby's doing that he's not doing, because like I don't want people to sort of think that I'm bragging or, you know, like enjoying it too much. It's like, well, actually, that's not right either. You know, you can't scaremonger people into thinking that it's all going to be this sort of like hellish, no sleep nightmare, because it's like, it's not that. Like, of course, there are parts that are hard, and like no baby is, you know, an absolute dream, but it's great. And like, it's also possible to have a life and be a mum and to still be you. And I think that sometimes that message can be lost a bit.
Yeah. How do you find that with your identity? You know, some people are like, I had a baby and then immediately now I feel like I'm not Ellie anymore. I'm just this woman who's like feeding a baby with her boobs and is like the carrot. Did that happen to you, that like loss of identity?
Yeah, I think definitely in the early weeks particularly, because also what I hadn't appreciated is how little you get back from a newborn baby. Like, it just, like, he didn't do anything for like weeks, and like it takes like 4 or 5 weeks to smile even. So they're just sort of like there and your nipples are bleeding and like and they just want to feed all the time or cry. And it's like, I think I really hadn't appreciated how hard and how unrewarding those first few weeks would be. I thought it was gonna be this like amazing bubble and I'd just be like glowing and breastfeeding as I walked around the house in like a silk gown. It wasn't the case. And so yeah, so I definitely had that, I think, for the first few weeks where I sort of was, you know, but also in those first few weeks you're just trying to adjust and cope and it's absolutely mental and you're just like, what has happened? But I think for me, again, it's like lucky that I could get back to work. I mean, it's funny because I feel like everything I say is contradictory. But on the one hand, I was like feeling so guilty about the fact that I went back to work so early. And he's like the youngest baby in nursery. And it's just, you know, I felt awful about that. But on the flip side, I think it's great that I've been able to get that sense of identity back. And so I think I've enjoyed motherhood a lot more because I'm still enjoying those other parts of my life.
It's like what you were saying, and it kind of is like on a micro level what this series of the podcast is about, but it's everyone's motherhood will look very different and everyone will do it in a way that works for them. But there is so much kind of like scripture about the right way to do it and how to be a good mother and what the right time is. And any kind of deviation, I think, can make other people feel insecure about their choices. And I don't know why with motherhood, but it's definitely one of the most sort of like heated and fertile grounds for sort of like anger and frustration and projection. And like whenever I see like Em Clarkson's post or like anyone that's pregnant online or has like a young child, I think it's just because women are constantly being judged anyway, that then there's such a sense of frustration when something doesn't work for you in a way that it did for someone else. And it ends up being, yeah, a lot of projection, I think.
Yeah. And don't even get me started on sort of like the amount of advice on mothering or like parenting there is online. And like, it's an overload of sort of information and everyone is telling you how to do it. And if you don't do this thing, you're doing it wrong. And it's a minefield. And in the end, I've just given up sort of trying to actually do anything that any of the experts say, because it's just like, it's too difficult and they all say different things. But it is, I think that it's a very vulnerable time, just in terms of like the hormones and also, you know, feeling isolated from other parts of your life. And I think that it doesn't help when there is this real sense of judgment if you make any mistakes or if you do anything that's different to someone else.
It is complicated. I think that like it also what you're saying about not looking at advice, I think this is the really interesting space that we're in. Like, again, everything's becoming so intellectualized, whereas before it was sort of about this idea it's very natural and you kind of figure it out and you go along and the baby will arrive and you'll just know what to do. And now everyone's going, well, actually it's blah blah blah. And there is so many conflicting things. That I love listening to Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe's podcast. Do you ever listen to it?
No.
It's like Parenting Hell, and it's about like all these celebrities talking about how they raise their kids. But it's so funny because they all have these really specific evangelical ideas about the best way to like make your baby sleep or the best way, and all of them are completely different, and it just makes you realize that actually there's no right way.
There really isn't. And like, there's no, babies are so different, like they're all so different and they've got their own personalities and they dictate really what happens. I'm a totally different mum to the one that I expected to be. I thought I was going to be like super chilled and just like, he would just be like hanging out with me wherever I went. And I'm obsessed with routine.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, which is like not what I expected at all. But it's because my baby likes routine. Yeah. And I've just sort of been led really by what he needs. And, you know, I tried to read all these books and I was sort of like to the letter trying to follow 15 different parenting guides. And in the end, I was like, okay, I'm just going to work it out on my own. I still need something quite structured, but I'm not going to read all these different books because it was stressing me out too much trying to do it right. And yeah, I think that's the main thing that I want all parents to kind of know is that whatever you're doing is probably right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. It's like, stop comparing yourself to all these other parents. Stop comparing your baby to other babies. Just try and enjoy it, because you're going to drive yourself mad otherwise.
Maybe I need to have a baby to get better at my routine. It sounds so. Like they're really good at getting it. Because even like my sister had these, you know, when they do the little like, oh, I can't remember, not milestones. What are they called? You know, the babies and at every age.
Yeah, milestones.
Is it the milestone? They do like a different thing. And I was like, God, that is quite a lot of like stress me putting, like, they'll be like, well, so-and-so did this. They reached their third milestone at 4 weeks or whatever, because they're like really granular, aren't they?
But they're also nonsense. It's like, honestly, you'll have sort of, this health visitor will be completely going mental if your baby's not walking by one. But it's like, adults all learn to walk.
Yeah,
like,
it's so true.
It's not like there's a baby that didn't walk by one and just like now, like he's like scooting around age 30. Like, it's not, I just think that we put so much pressure on things like that when really they will probably be fine. And like some babies will be, you know, like I've now got mum friends because I'm a mum now, and all of our babies are doing different things, and like one of them will be great in one area and then, you know, not as advanced in another, and then, you know, my baby will be really advanced in one respect but then not very good at this other bit. And it's just I think that you just have to kind of like accept who they are and try and be as relaxed as possible. I don't know, I probably sound like a dickhead to people listening, but it's just like I just think you've got to try and enjoy it, because otherwise, like, what is the point in doing it if you're just gonna like stress and hate every minute?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I wanted to ask, as you've got a new documentary coming out, which I keep seeing amazing press for, and I want to talk to you about what it is. Actually, let's talk about what it is first, because then my follow-up question is, how does being a mother and having that identity now change how you approach like the situations that you put yourself in work? Because I don't know, would you say this is probably the most dangerous or probably the most like kind of scary situation in terms of like where you've gone with your investigative journalism?
Yeah, I think this is probably, it's definitely the most scared I have felt making a documentary. So basically what happens is I've made a documentary about sexual harassment, trying to show how prevalent it is and trying to show the reality of what women face. So I did a number of undercover stunts, and one was I signed up to a load of dating apps using photos of me when I was 18 and just got inundated with dick pics.
Oh my gosh.
So many dick pics. And then another part was I went undercover on two nights out in one weekend. So once in Liverpool, once in London. And the idea was to show, I was acting drunk, and the idea was to show what kind of behavior you encounter as a drunk woman separated from her friends on a night out. And so across the two nights, I was followed three times, once by two men, twice by solo men. And one of the men came all the way back to my hotel room where I confronted him and asked why he'd followed me there. And, you know, the whole time that they were sort of interacting with me on the street, I didn't really say, I never ever consented to them following me. I never suggested that they came back to my hotel. You know, I was just saying things like, I'm fine on my own, I don't need any help, I'm gonna find my friends, and they continue to follow me. And I've been undercover before, and I'm quite good at compartmentalizing. I can sort of, and I think you have to be to do my line of work, like, I can take myself out of it and I can take the emotion out of it, and, you know, I'm a journalist who's there to report on facts. And this is the most sort of emotionally invested I think I've felt, and it really, I mean, as soon as the guy leaves the hotel room, I just burst into tears, which is really, really unlike me. And I just, I don't know if it was because I'd recently had a baby and it all just, and everything just felt very heightened, or if it was just the subject matter particularly got me. It definitely has, I think, changed my, I mean, in just thinking about this documentary, like, you know, I feel a huge amount of pressure raising a baby and, you know, how do you teach them about all of these big world issues and how do you make them into a good person? And that's like a huge pressure that I think I feel. And then also, yeah, in terms of my line of work, I would have said yes to pretty much anything. I'd have thrown myself into any situation, I think. Whereas now I would definitely be more careful about what I take on.
I know I'm going to watch the documentary, so I don't want to ask too many questions, but when can I ask you more about it? Because I just think it's...
You can.
because I think it's so important. It's so good to speak about. Because as I said, like just before recording this, I was talking to a couple of my guy friends. They were like, oh my God, I've seen this documentary she's doing. And they're like, can't believe it, I'm so shocked. And I was like, oh no, I'm not, that doesn't shock me at all. Like I the amount, also sometimes I feel like I'm being followed all the time and sometimes a man's just walking behind you. But even that, your heart is like, oh my God. How are you being filmed? Have you got a body camera? Are there people nearby? Like, or did you genuinely feel alone in the moment when they're like coming with you?
So I was wearing a hidden camera and then I had members of the team stationed around me who were also wearing hidden cameras. And I had a specialized security team. So I had one guy who was following me out on the street and I had another guy who was hiding in the bathroom of my hotel room.
Okay.
So I was really well protected and I knew, you know, I had a safe word. I knew that if anything were to happen, I had people sort of right there who could step in. But when I was, you know, when I'm in the moment and I'm in character, I'd had an acting lesson to teach me how to be drunk.
I was going to ask, that's quite difficult to do.
It is really hard. Although she basically said, have you been drunk before? Just remember. And I had so much experience that I actually I think I did all right.
Also, I suppose if they've been drinking as well, if they've been out, it's quite hard to gauge.
And it's quite, and it's easier in a way. I think what's really difficult in this, and it's sort of like my criticism of anyone acting drunk on TV, is almost when you have to talk or when you have to act kind of tipsy and it just never ever really resonates.
The slurriness is too...
Yeah, whereas like I was sort of, you know, I was so past that point of being drunk where I just wasn't really responding and I just had to kind of like stumble and not answer, which is a lot easier to do than actually trying to like have a conversation while pretending to be drunk.
So like the thing that is shocking or like just validates why I need to do this is you're filming this documentary, you go out twice and within that, like it's not like you had to keep going out and try and find an instance when someone would do this. It happened literally like that straight away.
And that's what I think is most shocking is this could happen on, I feel certain that on any night out in any city in the UK, if I went out and did that, it would happen.
Yeah.
I think something would happen. And that's, I think, what's shocking. But you're right. I think women, for women, it's totally unsurprising because and that's why I wanted to make this program. And sexual harassment is something that I've really wanted to tackle for a long time. And I've never quite known how to do it because I think we're so accustomed to hearing about all of these sort of awful experiences and, you know, sometimes they're really glamorized for TV and so people expect all this like graphic awful detail whenever they're hearing about this kind of topic. And so I think sometimes when you're trying to explain the weight of like a comment or a look or someone following you, people just don't get it. And by people, I mean often men don't get it because it's like, well, it's, you know, it becomes this scale where it's like, well, that's not as bad as this. And, you know, that's definitely not as bad as that thing. When actually it's all a spectrum. It's all a continuum really, where the reason that I feel so frightened when you catcall me or when you sort of stare at me for too long is because I think that this could be the next step or I don't know what your intentions are and I don't know whether you're a good person or a bad person. And it's really trying to highlight that, I think.
Yeah, and it's just so insidious as well because it's like these men, what's the after process with the men that then have been filmed following you? Do you have to, they have to contact them or?
So we were required to protect the men's identities in order to comply with our legal and regulatory duties because of the secret filming. And then we haven't reported what happens to the police. We do have the footage, but we don't have any details about who the men were or any, we don't know anything about them. But we're just hoping that by transmitting the film, it's going to raise awareness and get people talking.
It absolutely will. And I think that it's that fact that it's, these things happen in the dark when people are on their own. And it's not to say that, I think like, obviously I do agree that it's not all men, but it is all types of men. And I think that's what's like the differentiation. It's obviously not every man out there is like, causing harm to women, but it comes in every aspect. And I think that's why when it's like someone that's just following you home after the club, it's not like you said, how it's like kind of really sensationalized in the press. And it's like, oh my God, like taken is what people imagine.
And the thing is, and someone told me, I think someone I spoke to for the documentary gave me this analogy, which I thought was really good for this, where she was like, a man is like a loaded gun, where if I go into a room and there's a gun there, I don't know if the gun's loaded or not. So I don't know if that gun could kill me, but it's a gun. And I know that some guns could kill me.
Yeah.
And if it was loaded, it could kill me. So I'm going to treat it with caution. And it's exactly the same with men. It's like, I don't know anything about you. You're a stranger to me, but I know that some men are dangerous. So until I know whether you're a dangerous man or not, I'm going to treat you with caution.
That is such a good analogy.
Isn't it?
That's so good to explain that. You touched on this briefly, but obviously with raising a son, because this is something I think we talk so much about, like raising daughters to be like protected in society or whatever. And then we're like, actually, it's the men that, like you said, that is something that preoccupies you. Is it something that you're already thinking about? I mean, I know he's only 7 months old, so you can't be like, look.
Okay. I'm schooling him. yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's something that I do feel really conscious of. And it's something that I definitely want to try and bring into my parenting. I don't know how you approach that. And it is more important, I think, to educate our sons than it is to educate our daughters, because this is ingrained in girls. And yeah. This is something that we, again, touch on in the documentary. Like from school age, we are taught to police ourselves, to be aware of our surroundings, to not wear things that might, you know, incite some sort of violence, like as if wearing something can incite violence. But men aren't, or young boys aren't taught to check each other or yeah. to about what kind of behaviors can be seen as predatory or what can be scary for a girl, in the same way that girls are taught about, you know, the things that men do that scare them.
And what about like how's it with your partner? Is he really hands-on with the baby? How's all that been? Because like yeah. in the first few weeks, I didn't know this either, but apparently isn't it like they always get really upset because they're basically useless because you just have to breastfeed. I didn't realize that. There's nothing. They always want to be really helpful, and actually the mum's like, get out.
Yeah, I can't. Just leave. Yeah, yeah. He was just sort of cleaning the house for for the first month, which is great.
Great. Love that.
Loved it. No, he's great. He's really hands-on. And yeah, I feel really lucky, to be honest. Like, I feel very supported, you know, from my partner, from my family. My friends are all excited for me as well. And I know that I'm really fortunate to have all of that support around me. So yeah, it definitely makes it easier, I think. And it probably makes it a much more enjoyable process.
And is he the same age as you, or is he?
He's a bit older. He's a few years older. Yeah.
And has his friends already started having kids, or are they?
A couple of them. Yeah. So yeah, there's like one of his friends has recently had twins, and then there's a couple of older kids in the group as well, but still not that many of his friends have.
Yeah. And what did you think like the gender decision was like when it happened? It sounded like you were both pretty in unison with your like reactions and like how you wanted to go through with it, but did you find that when you were thinking about these pressures, did he understand it, or was he kind of like quite...
He was actually so supportive. He was really just like, you know, whatever you want to do, this is your decision. Like, I'll do it now if you want to do it. If you want to wait, then we could do that. And he was great, really. I couldn't have like asked for more, to be
honest.
That's
so nice.
Yeah.
Because I think like, especially with me and my friends, like when we were, especially when I'd like broken up with my ex, and some of my friends were getting married and some of us were single, and then some of the guys are single, and the girls, we started having these conversations like, right, we're 28, so I'm 29, that's, yeah. So I'm 30, then I need to have a baby if I want to be married by the time. And then we're like doing all this maths in our heads, and we were like, okay, so I need to have met someone like 2 months ago. Yeah. And then we were speaking to the boys and they were like, oh, but we can just like go up with someone that's like 23. And we were like, because that we don't have that like time thing where not only can they like keep having babies up until they're like 60s, but also they all just could start dating girls way younger than them and then like again extend their like timeline of how long they've got to have kids. And we were like, this is so unfair.
Yeah.
Because all of us were starting, I think it's like when you get to around 28 is the age when you're like, because you're approaching 30 or like really in your late 20s, the fear does start to set in.
Yeah.
Even if logically or like illogically you feel like that it doesn't need to be there. And then with man, it's like 29 for a man is the equivalent of being like 22 for a woman.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
No, it's true. And I think that timeline thing's really interesting as well. And I think basically it's just like life throws things at you and then that gets completely like blown up where,
yeah.
You know, I had this timeline where I was like, right, okay, so like we've been together for this many years and then like, we'll probably get married and then we'll like buy a house and then we'll get a dog and then like, you know, like 8 years later I'll have a baby. And then all of a sudden I had to have a baby the next minute and it was yeah. like, oh, okay, so like when am I going to do any of those other things? And I think that that's just really like life doesn't end up in that sort of linear pattern where you end up doing everything on time. You don't have a 5-year plan for your life, really. And I think that it's really, yeah, we put so much pressure on ourselves to like hit all these milestones, like
yeah.
babies.
Yeah.
But, like, I've got so many friends that are ending long-term relationships now and are like moving abroad or are having career changes and are doing all of these amazing things. And it just makes you realize that like happiness and fulfillment has so many different packages and it's not just being with someone, getting engaged, getting married, having a baby. Like, that can be it for some people. And of course, those things can bring you fulfillment, but it doesn't have to look like that.
It's not the only, yeah, it's empowering to think that, like, oh, I haven't gone wrong just because I've not gone down that route.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really nice note to end on. Could you, what else? I think the documentary, sadly, will already be out and done when this is out. But what else are you working on? Is there anything you can tell us about that
you've got coming up? You can also watch it on All Four.
Oh yeah, definitely do watch it in hindsight. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you can watch the documentary now on All Four. It's called Undercover Sexual Harassment, The Truth. And I am working on a podcast investigation for Spotify at the moment.
Any more details? We're not, it's top secret.
It's top secret.
Okay.
I can never give too many details basically until it's coming out, but I'm working on that. And then, yeah, hopefully got a few more projects lined up for next year.
Amazing. Oh, well, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining
me.
That was nice. Nice to finally meet you in real life.
I know, not just Instagram messages.
I know. In your DMs. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for listening, everyone. And I will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.